Hi there, I'm Viv Joynes, and this is episode 9 of the Live Beyond podcast, where I chat to people who really step outside of their comfort zones and achieve some pretty extraordinary things. So people that inspire me and will hopefully inspire others too. So on the 26th of January this year, a group of women called the Coxless Crew finished rowing across the Pacific Ocean. Having covered almost 9,000 miles, they'd spent 257 days at sea and in the process obtained 2 world records. Now, I know the word epic is used quite a lot, but I think this is pretty epic. So the journey was divided into 3 legs, so from San Francisco to Hawaii, from Hawaii to Samoa, and then Samoa to Cairns in Australia. So I have the real privilege on this episode to speak to a lady called Meg Dios, who joined the crew on the 3rd leg, going from Samoa to Cairns in Australia, and she spent 77 days at sea. I hasten to add that she, before having started in Samoa, she had never rowed before. Talk about taking on a challenge, stepping outside of your comfort zone to achieve a really incredible thing. So we chat about lots of things. We chat about how she got involved, the preparation, overcoming fear, laughter, the crew, the importance obviously of working together, and also the values of the crew. I think that's a really interesting conversation. And then, you know, the everyday practicalities of living on a boat, which, you know, difficult to get your head around, sleep, rowing, going to the loo, nutrition, all of that kind of thing. I just found Meg absolutely fascinating, and I'm simply in awe of anybody who's willing to take on that kind of challenge. I mean, just fantastic. I'd also really love to hear your feedback. So if you've enjoyed this episode or previous episodes and you have a few minutes, don't hesitate to leave a few words either on iTunes or Audioboom with a short review, things that you like, things you don't like, even ideas that you want to share. So please don't hesitate to do that. I'm so grateful for everybody's support and I really hope that you're enjoying the episodes and there'll be more to come. So here we go. I'm going to hand over to the conversation with Meg. Really hope you enjoy it. And thanks so much for listening. Hi, Meg.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being on the episode. Really pleased to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So this is pretty exciting. I'm sitting opposite a lady who's just been part of a group of women called the Coxless Crew who've crossed the Pacific rowing. Pretty amazing. I actually met Meg at an Al Humphreys evening, so he's kind of an adventurer type person in the UK who had organised this evening called, I think, an adventure gathering, and there's just a huge amount of people there all chatting to each other. And we got chatting and I found out about this project, so I've been following it ever since. So it was a group of 4 women. They covered about 9,000 miles in 257 days at sea. Pretty extraordinary. And in the process, obtained 2 world records. So first group of women to cross the Pacific, and first group of 4 to cross the Pacific. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, so Meg will correct me if I'm wrong about anything, but it was divided up into 3 legs.
Yeah.
So I think Laura, Natalia and Emma did the full distance, and then there was a different woman for each of the legs. So yeah. Isabel did the first leg from San Francisco to Hawaii, Lizanne from Hawaii to Samoa, and Meg from Samoa to Cairns in Australia. So Meg spent...
Correct.
Yay. Woo! So Meg spent 77 days at sea with the girls. So I think firstly, just huge, massive congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And actually, funny enough, there was an evening a couple of nights ago called the Night Adventure, organised again by Al Humphreys, and the Coxless Crew did a talk there, which was just fantastic and really, really interesting. But I suppose, I guess, first of all, how did you get involved?
So, yeah, a lot of people ask this question. It's not a particularly interesting answer. I was writing my dissertation at uni.
Okay.
And I was like, get me out of here. So the best website to go to is Escape the City, which is actually the night that we met at. Brilliant website. Had a little look. And this girl called Laura was like, hi, we need someone to row the Pacific with us. actually were looking for a team of people. So I was like, yeah, sure. Sent off a video. Never rode, never done really many. I've climbed a few mountains, stuff like that, but not really any ocean stuff. Sent it off, got through to the next stages, and then ended up rowing.
Okay, amazing. So, but what was the process? I mean, was there a kind of proper application? I presume there was, because I imagine there was quite a few applicants.
Laura, the preparation for this has been going on for sort of 3 to 4 years now. So there have been different team members for different reasons, you know, because the row was postponed a few times, that different people have come and gone. And so, yeah, there was a proper preparation. We had to go to Bisham Abbey, which is where the GB rowing team train. Okay. And we had to be sort of... We had our sports like Keith Goddard there, who did some analysis of all of the brain stuff. And then we had Alex Wolf, who was our strength and conditioning coach there, who had to do a bit of physical stuff. Also just get to meet the other people and know really what was involved and actually what you were signing up for.
Okay. And then, so, because going through, so there's a website and a brilliant, an absolutely brilliant blog. And the amazing thing about the blog is that there was a post, I think, I mean, every day. So the discipline that must have been required to keep that going while rowing, I think is amazing. But it's definitely, definitely worth...
Blog day was actually one of the best days, though.
Oh, really?
Because it meant... So you blogged every 4 days because there were four on the boat. And it meant that actually you were treated as lazy of leisure. So you didn't have to do any cooking that day.
Okay.
You literally could lay down at the back of the cabin and just write.
Okay.
But when it's rough, or you're, I mean, when you were seasick, it was horrific. Because looking... I mean, it's like being car sick when you're reading a book.
Yeah.
It was just like you'd write a sentence and have to lay down. And then you'd write another sentence. So you do see some sort of shorter blogs when we're throwing up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, always a bonus.
But were you... Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was then another sort of second stage recruitment in the Brecon Beacons. Is that right?
So that was... So actually, that was part of... So if you got through the first round of Bisham Abbey, then you had to go to the Brecon Beacons. And there, I didn't actually go.
Yeah, I couldn't
make that weekend. And I'd actually decided then that I wasn't able to take part in the whole three days. And I said to Laura, if you need a reserve, you know, let me know.
Okay.
And so they got a team together where Nat and Iz got involved. And Lizanne. Lizanne got involved then as well.
Okay.
But she started her own osteopath business.
Right.
So me and Lizanne basically said, yeah, you know, we'll be reserves.
Yeah.
And in March, we got the call from Laura saying, actually, you know, we'd like someone to do one leg, one leg, one leg.
Okay, so that wasn't always the plan.
You'd have, because it's such a long time ago, you'd have to sort of speak to Laura for all of the ins and outs. But it was the original plan, I think, and then it was a full team, and then unfortunately Izzy couldn't do all three legs.
Okay, right.
We did a leg each, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think the girls would all agree that it was quite nice having a bit of variety and someone new getting on the boat.
Mm.
Just sort of new stories, new chat.
Because what was that like? So first of all, in terms of time, when did the whole thing start? When did they leave San Francisco?
April 2015.
Okay.
They left San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah.
And you joined?
In March 2015.
Okay, and then you joined the boat.
Joined the boat. It was because we were actually 3 months delayed.
Okay.
Because of the currents, El Nino, really slowed us down. So I was meant to leave in at the end of August, but actually ended up leaving at the end of October to join them.
Right, okay. So I suppose, first of all, what was it like not knowing when you were going to go? Because that's pretty difficult. And then I can't... Because obviously there's kind of three girls that have been on the boat, and just sort of the feeling of integrating that.
Yeah.
And going in, what was that like?
Really hard. Well, it really hard in terms of the fact that they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't actually... So I landed in Samoa, ready for the third leg, and I'd never stepped on a rowing boat. I'd never actually touched any oars.
Right.
And I was about to row the last leg of the Pacific to bring us into Cairns. But it was just brilliant. And our sports psych was just fantastic. Keith Goddard, the team dimensions, we all knew the ins and outs of each other already.
Okay.
Even though I'd met Iz twice. I saw her on land as well, but hadn't met any of the girls really very much.
I was going to say, how much time had you spent with them beforehand?
Before I said yes in March, I'd met Ems twice. One of them was at the first thing in Bisham Abbey.
Okay.
I'd met Laura for lunch. Really not very much. I mean, less than a day I'd seen her for. So then, yeah, spoken on Skype.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, arrived in Samoa and really, really didn't know them at all. But we had sort of lots of different ways. For example, we knew our hot buttons, and so things that really got on your nerves.
Okay.
So for someone, it might be, oh God, for me, it's being patronised or something like that. Things like that, which actually you think, oh no, it's fine. But on a boat, when you're in a really confined space, these things are things that actually will become really annoying.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we all knew how to bring out the best in each other.
Okay.
And these are really good things to play on and use if someone was having a bad day or if someone was having a good day. You know, they could help you, and we all helped each other in that, really. It was nice. We were never all in a bad place at the same time.
Oh, that's amazing. And so what role did this sports psychologist play? Was he kind of constantly in touch with you throughout the...
Every single day on the water, Keith sent us a quote.
Okay.
He was in regular email contact. He was there whenever we needed him, and he was also the contact with our families. If something had happened at sea or if something had happened to them, he was the communication and sort of the mediator between both. He's just been, like, yeah... so supportive.
That's a really amazing thing to have something like that, I can imagine. And so what was the dynamic like when you started? Did you just feel like completely at home with the girls straight away then when you kind of stepped on the boat?
Keith had really sort of said that it was important for us to have some sort of bonding time on land just to get to know the girls, which happened, and it was really nice, and you know, we were all involved together. But I think nothing really can prepare you for stepping on a boat.
Mm.
29-foot boat where you're sharing a two-man tent with someone that you barely know.
Yeah.
But I just, for me, I had really said to myself, I'm going to take it all in my stride, and these girls are just amazing, and we all got on so well, and I just loved it.
Oh, amazing.
And I learned so much about, well, I learned how to row, which was a bonus. Yeah, I don't know, it was just brilliant. It worked so well, and I think that's all down to the sports psychology.
Okay.
And the teamwork that we did. Amazing. I guess.
So when you taking a step back, I guess, what was the kind of why for the whole project? I mean, apart from just wanting to row across the Atlantic, there's obviously the charity
Pacific.
Aspect and Pacific, yeah. Very important.
What was the reason? Well, our main aim really is to fight adversity.
Yeah.
You know, we're raising funds for breast cancer care. And Walking with the Wounded. We've raised about 50,000 so far.
Okay.
But they're both really fantastic charities that mean really a lot to us. We're still sort of raising as much as we can for them now we're back. So I guess that's the main reason.
Yeah.
But what we always say, especially now we're back, is that we've crossed a literal Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
We physically crossed the Pacific, but everyone has a Pacific to cross.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's you want to run your first marathon, whether it's you're really scared of public speaking and that's your challenge, or whether it's you've actually got breast cancer, or sort of you've had a limb amputated, where actually you're forced to cross the Pacific. So yeah, I don't know, it was really great on the boat that people emailed us really inspiring stories about how they were crossing their Pacific, or how they had already crossed their Pacific.
Mm.
And you know, once you lose sight of shore, and you're in the ocean, you're crossing it, the only way really is to get to the other side.
Yeah.
And when we were rowing, we didn't really have a choice. We had to keep rowing, kind of like, you know, when you're in the middle of your own challenge.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite universal, the message, and I think it can apply to a lot of different things, really.
Yeah, and the lessons that you learn, I guess, are quite universal, which we'll come on to. But in terms of kind of your motivations for doing it, were there any, apart from doing the dissertation, was there any other kind of driver for getting involved?
I'm really passionate about women. That was the main reason, really, that I think... Yeah, the message of women can, and teamwork, and a team of women in this tiny space.
Yeah.
But also the aim that I think it would be amazing if we did finish the challenge, which is great to say we now have, breaking two world records, or setting two world records.
Yeah.
Really, but at the same time, my auntie has got breast cancer. So that was another reason when I kind of thought, actually, it'd be really cool to do it for a charity that means quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And what was the prep like? I mean, something like, so a lot of the episodes so far have been sort of running and cycling, and I can kind of sort of, I know what, in my head I know what would be required in order to do a marathon, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I have absolutely no idea what is required to take on rowing an ocean.
It was, God, it doesn't sound, it was hard. It was really hard because we had to put on a lot of weight.
Okay.
Which sounds great. Woohoo, I can have a donut. Yeah. Once you've had 15 donuts, you're kind of a bit over it.
Right.
And so the constant eating was one thing, but also it was something that I definitely had never done. I, you know, quite like doing cardio, and it was no cardio girls, all about weightlifting and strength building.
And why the no cardio?
Because cardio would have sort of burnt. I don't want to go into the science because I'm not actually entirely sure. But it has a different effect on your muscles, basically.
It's like the opposite of what I think in my head. I'd think you're sitting, like, rowing away.
Not at all. And because sitting on an erg doing rowing actually is completely different to being on the ocean. So we always say as well, a lot of it was actually mental strength. So although there was a serious lot of physical training, there was just as much mental training. And I think that's one of the things I'll take from the row, that actually it is, a lot of it is in your head. Of how mentally strong are you, as well as sort of physically strong. But yeah, we all had very big muscles when we got on the water.
And what kind of mental prep was it? What kind of things did you do?
Ranged from cognitive behavioural therapy.
Okay.
Team sort of stuff, which was really, we all had sort of neo-psychology sort of, they weren't tests, but to see how we matched with other people on the boat in terms of our personalities. And we also obviously use that to our advantages to bring out the best in people, really.
What kind of example? Do you have an example of?
Different people were more extroverted, different people were more introverted. And obviously when you're dealing with a situation, not everyone likes to be really open and talk about it. Some people like to be really open and talk about it. And it's sort of managing people's behaviours and the way people like to deal with it, kind of to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
But putting things in place, really, to deal with, if we did have to make a decision on the boat, then how would we do it? Okay. What would suit everybody? Things like that. Mindfulness.
Okay.
As well. We also had a PES, performance enhancing strategies.
Right.
Where we'd prepare ourselves, for example, winding down. How would you wind down towards the end of your rowing shift? Because you have to sleep then straight away. So quite often when you've been on a run and you're a bit pumped, you don't often want to go straight to sleep.
Yep.
So you have to begin winding down when you're coming off of the oars, especially if it's really rough and you've got your adrenaline going.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's sort of sleep under pressure, really, because you know you've got that 2 hours, get inside the cabin, you have about half an hour to sort of sort yourself out, and then you've got to sleep for the exact amount of time to then manage the sleep deprivation.
Okay. So yes, this takes us back onto the boat.
Sorry.
No, that's absolutely fine. It's great. So what was it? I mean, was there a typical day? I'd imagine it was quite structured in order to...
Oh my gosh, it couldn't have been more structured.
Yeah,
it is 2 hours on, 2 hours off.
Okay.
And that was one of the biggest shocks when I got onto the boat, because you don't have a dentist appointment. You don't get stuck in traffic. You know, it really is. Yeah. 2 hours, and honestly, 1 minute late, and it's really not... It's not cool. That's 1 minute less of your sleep that you're going to have because someone else is late.
Yeah.
So that was one of the most important things, to be on time for your shift.
Okay.
In terms of structure, so that makes 24 hours a day, 12 hours of rowing, 12 hours off, which makes 6 off shifts.
Okay.
And 4 of those off shifts you would sleep.
Okay.
So, I mean, ideally you would sleep, and then you'd have 2 awake shifts, so 4 hours of awake.
Okay.
To do all of your eating, to do some washing, to do all of your like contact with people that you wanted to speak to.
Okay.
So you can imagine quite often actually it did run over into the sleeping shifts where you wanted to make a phone call because of the time difference. So things like that, and you've got someone else in the cabin, so then it affects their sleep. You know, there's lots.
It's probably the sleep thing that gets me the most. So you're sleeping an hour and a half, 4 times a day, total 6 days in any 24-hour period. Did you start doing that before you went? Not at all. So you literally arrive on the boat and suddenly your whole body is out of whack in every
way. But at the same time, we get off the boat and we go completely back into our normal sleeping routine.
Okay.
So the body's just amazing. And 2 hours, well, an hour and a half can feel like a really long night's sleep. Strangely, I woke up in the night last night.
Yeah.
And my eyes just wouldn't open.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this is what it was like, where you'd be like, right, come on, in 2 hours we can have another nap. And you try and get really excited for your next nap.
Yeah.
But I really struggled with it.
And that sounds brutal. Sleep deprivation. And that's the other thing. I mean, so the 3 girls that have been on the boat for a while, presumably they were used to it. I don't know whether you ever get used to
it. But the 5 days off in either Hawaii or Samoa, yeah. that was 5 days where you had to adjust back into a normal sleeping pattern and then get back onto the water.
Yeah.
And you'd think those 5 days were actually just having a rest, but we had to restock, well, the girls had to restock the boat, get completely ready for the next journey. And it wasn't just, you know, a week away. It's a full-on journey in different countries where actually perhaps, you know, Samoa, there weren't all of the supplies.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, we one day we were trying all different dried fruits that we hadn't tried before.
Wow.
Because there wasn't dried mango.
Okay.
So it's things like that, which is, you know, actually takes really a lot of time in getting all the supplies. So sheepskin, for example, everything that had been sent over from the UK, from sort of our sponsors, organising that. Yeah, it wasn't really a rest.
No, and so, your body is constantly in some kind of state of stress, I guess, from the physical exertion, from the lack of sleep, and presumably that affects people's mental kind of sanity in a way, but I know there's a lot of you. But I mean, were there difficult periods where, I mean, you said earlier that there wasn't really a time where everyone was down and so people were able to help each other out, but were there any kind of really bad days that...
Yeah.
And how did you manage it, I guess?
I mean, it's more... bad is a bit too much of a what's been involved kind of thing, but I'd say more frustrated.
Okay.
Days when currents were pushing you in the wrong direction. Mm. You know, there were days when you're sitting on the oars and you're rowing your absolute heart out just to hold the position.
Oh, my goodness.
And seeing on our tracker 0.0 as your speed, yet you're rowing really hard, is really frustrating. Or going back into the cabin and knowing that you've gone actually more north, and you're heading not really in the right direction at all, but you're trying to get across the current. And from all of the legs, that was experienced, the frustrations. I mean, we were at sea for Christmas and New Year.
True.
So the three girls who had been on the boat from the beginning, that obviously wasn't the expectation because we were 3 months delayed. So they found out that that was going to happen in the second leg, but there was still some sort of, I don't want to say hope, but we... potentially could have got there for New Year.
Yeah.
If the currents had all been, you know, if the trade winds had been perfect, but we weren't. We ended up getting in at the end of January. So it's not just a day's delay, it's longer delay. So waking up on Christmas Day, I think, you know, we've all got quite close families, well, very close families. And it's just a day when really, you don't really want to be on a boat, not having showered in the middle of the Pacific.
Yeah.
But do you know what? It was one of the best Christmases, I think.
Really?
We all say... definitely most different, but one of the best. And it was almost like the Pacific knew, because the currents were pushing us in the right direction in the winds.
Nice.
And we put a line out and we actually didn't need to row. So we had 8 hours off just to spend time with each other, have a chat. We had some interviews and it was just
super.
Awesome. Yeah, it was such a great day. So.
And how did you keep in contact with kind of family? And was because the boat was called Doris, right?
Yeah, boat was called Doris. We had an allocated amount of minutes per week that we could use the satellite phone.
Okay.
And a little aerial out. Sometimes the signal was absolutely terrible. Sometimes it was really okay. And you couldn't really be out on deck speaking on the phone, mainly because it was too splashy and the phone wasn't waterproof. So you had to do it in the cabin.
Yeah.
So you'd go under one of the hatches, signal out, and you'd have a chat. That's it really. Not very often, but we had email as well.
Yeah, okay.
So once a day we'd turn on the emails, and that's how we'd blog as well. So we'd send the email to our onshore support, Ella, who did our social media, and she posted the blog for us.
Super. And so you had the front cabin and the aft cabin, right?
Yeah.
And so you just kind of, did you live two of you in each one?
No, we just used the aft cabin, the bigger cabin, for all of us.
Okay.
Which is what's so funny, and I wrote a blog about it actually, because you really are with your rowing partner. It's not like you talk to all four of you really, because all you do is change over.
Yeah.
It's like, hey girls, how you doing? Shut the door, you're in the cabin, they're outside.
Right.
Hey girls, how you doing? They're inside, you're outside. And it's very quick, you know, you get the really flat days where you can actually have a bit longer, but a lot of the time there's huge waves crashing over the edge and you've got to shut that door pretty quick because otherwise there's going to be water in the cabin.
So two in, two out,
which is so funny when you see the size of the space. And yeah, the blog I wrote was just like, when you swap over with your rowing partner, so you get a new rowing partner every sort of 6 days, just to keep it a bit changeable, you know, you don't want two teams.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, bye, it's been great. And it'd be a bit emotional. And then you'd kind of look out the cabin and they're facing you because they're rowing. You don't actually have much communication with them until you're back on rowing shift, which is about sort of another 15 days' time.
Yeah.
Really weird, really weird.
It is really, really, I think it's one of those things that's just really difficult to imagine because, okay, so you are a group, so I guess you don't suffer from loneliness in the way that somebody would be, like, rowing on their own or something, but just the lack of external impetus or kind of, I suppose you're getting emails and things, but I just find it really difficult to imagine just having this horizon, although I imagine the waves are quite big at times, so the horizon probably not as clear as others.
But it's, and that's why it's so exciting when you see a cargo ship.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's just, and we had cargo ships where you'd ring them and you'd say, hi, you know, we're Doris, and, well, we'd have some that would say, are you okay? You're moving so slowly. And we'd be like, we're going 2 knots today. This is really fast. So we'd be like, yeah, no, honestly, we're fine. But we had other ones that came a lot closer.
Okay.
And we'd say, oh, do you mind ringing your horn? And they'd be like, yeah, sure. And they'd go and pump their horn and the sound across the Pacific. Oh my goodness, it was just amazing.
I bet.
So great. In the second leg, they had a cargo ship as well that was going between San Fran and Hawaii, going back and forth with the Mokahana. And it came really close. And they sort of had a different communication. They saw it twice, I think, at different times. So it's just awesome.
Yeah,
We had a cruise ship that we spoke to.
I was going to say, what kind of different...
Mainly sort of like tankers... Cruise ships, not a huge amount, and whatever those ones that carry things. Cargo ships.
Yeah, okay. No pirates. We've mentioned this very briefly before.
Yeah,
I hadn't really thought about the fact that there could be...
There were some people swimming at night very close to our boat as we were leaving Samoa, which made us all jump out of our skin.
Oh, really?
Thinking, oh my God! But no, they were actually fishing. They told us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And actually, when the big ships came by, there weren't any sort of close... Can they see you? They can see you?
No. They can see us on their AIS, which is sort of the protocol. But honestly, you can't see us. Sometimes half a mile, depending on the waves.
Yeah.
Because if the waves are sort of higher than us,
yeah,
we're not balancing on top and there's not much height. So that's why AIS was so important.
Yeah.
For them to sort of see us beforehand. We did, as we were coming into Cairns, I was out of the cabin waving lights at a boat because they weren't answering their radio to us, which is another reason why you call them and say, looks like you're heading straight for us. We actually can't move.
Okay.
So can you just change your degrees on the compass by a few?
Oh my God, I can't believe you had that challenge coming into Cairns.
Yeah.
Like you're almost at the end. Because that's the other thing, actually. When you go into the third leg like that, there's a whole thing around challenges, particularly long ones, where you're kind of close to the end, but you're not at the end. And actually reading the blog, it's really interesting, because from a few weeks out, whoever's posting is like, I'm at the end, but I'm kind of not at the end, but we're getting closer, but gradually getting closer. And that can be quite a difficult place to be.
I wrote a blog called Nearly.
Yeah.
Are we nearly there yet? Because people really, from the beginning of the third leg, were like, you've done so well, you know, you're nearly there now. And it's like, hold on, what does nearly actually mean?
Yeah.
And I asked all of the girls what their nearly was, and it ranged from, like, seeing land.
Okay.
Which, seeing land is still a few days away.
Right, okay.
So, but that's still, you know, that could be up to 50 hours of rowing. That's quite a lot of rowing still. If you told me to go and do 50 hours of rowing now, I'd be like, what? But then some people were like, as soon as we come into the harbour, you know, we all had different nearlies, which was, it was quite interesting. And for me, actually, because normally when I do a challenge, you know, it's like, I've only got another day of this, or I've only got another, it's miles countdown.
Yeah.
But actually, that's one thing with rowing the Pacific, there wasn't a date that we were going to finish.
True.
There wasn't necessarily even a countdown of miles, because some days we were going backwards.
Yeah.
And so it's really... It played with my mind quite a lot, actually, towards the end.
Yeah, were you given sort of techniques to deal with that by your sports psychologist?
Yeah, a lot of talking about it really helped.
Okay.
Talking about it, managing expectations is another thing. And really, we always say sort of shift by shift, stroke by stroke.
Yeah.
So look to the next shift. And, you know, in the last few days coming into Australia, we were in negative currents and we had to row like we'd never rowed before.
Wow.
And... it was really sort of, we just have to focus on the now. We just have to row in this next shift. And there was not actually any space of thinking about the finish. You had to put your all into controlling your mind on
the now.
Really just, staying in the moment.
Yeah.
And that is another thing we all learn. Nat is particularly good at staying in the moment. And, you know, look out to sea, look at the colours.
Yeah.
You know, look at this amazing sunset. Whereas I don't think we really do that in this London life. Yeah. We don't look outside and go, wow, look where we are.
And what were the different... I mean, is it, in a few words, is it easy to describe the different personalities of the other girls?
We did have, probably not individually, because I think we're all, actually, there's so many similarities between us, and so many differences as well.
Okay.
And that's what made it so amazing. But definitely towards, in the third leg, we recognised, we used it as Fogel and Cracknell.
That was really interesting. I like that.
Yeah, because they both read The Atlantic, I don't know, like 10 years ago. And if you've watched the documentary, Cracknell was very performance-focused, and, you know, rowing really hard. And then there's Fogel who's like, oh, look at the stars! You know? And actually, so we said in I think it was an interview maybe, or a presentation, that that especially in the third leg, me and Nat were very much like, we had to be reminded that we were there to row an ocean.
Right.
Because we wanted to see the stars and we really wanted to be in the moment. And, you know, whilst rowing, but then Ems and Laura were really, let's keep rowing. So it was so great because we pulled those together.
Yeah.
We were like, oh my goodness, let's row really hard and look at the stars. And then we're still going to enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
And we're still going to get to Australia. So it was really merging for all of our personalities to come together. And it was brilliant. It was such a good moment when we realised we could actually do both.
I think that's so nice when you have the balancing thing. Because when I read that post, I was like, although I probably wish I wasn't, I probably am of the more Cracknell kind of, I'm just focused on the end goal and I'll do anything to get there.
Yeah.
But you do forget to stop and admire the view. Mm-hmm. And then you really lose the journey, I think. You lose part of the journey in doing that. So I just thought that was a really clever way.
Yeah, really good balance.
Of explaining it. And I guess, just generally, what were the... So the sleep deprivation... Actually, when you started, did you feel, from the physical exertion side of things, did you feel like... Because you were doing, obviously, the weights and things before.
Mm-hmm.
Did that training sort of feel like it had done enough to have you prepared?
Felt really strong.
Did you?
Yeah, and towards the... I think it was Nat, actually, that said, from her experience in the other legs, after day 60, you really feel your body starting to... just deteriorate in different ways.
Okay.
Your sores stop healing as well.
Okay.
Your body is more tired,
yeah.
You're sleeping deeper and it's harder to wake up, things like that.
Okay.
Definitely for me in the beginning, sleep deprivation didn't really bother me in the beginning.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm actually okay.
Yeah.
Because I love sleep.
Okay.
But towards the end, I was falling asleep on the oars.
Wow.
Which kind of, it's just very different. My sores definitely weren't healing as well. I had bad pressure sores. And all of the girls would say the same, whether it's first leg, second leg, third leg, that really just the longer at sea, the harder it gets, really.
And how do you get the amount? Because I think I read that you had to get sort of 5,000 calories in a day to make up for what you were burning.
I think so. I get confused with the calories, but yeah.
Or a lot.
Yeah, and burning off a lot.
Yeah.
But I think it works. Well, we were definitely burning off more calories than we could actually take in.
Because how do you actually get that much? And what were you eating, actually? Was it sort of dehydrated?
So it's dehydrated foods that you basically pour on water.
Yeah,
pour the water on them, they come alive. So you've got the chicken tikka masalas, you've got all of that, but you've also got muesli that's 800 calories, which is bonkers.
Yeah.
And I like it that it says really healthy muesli on the front of it, and then you eat it and it's just like, yeah, it's full of sugar. But then we had chocolate bars, we had protein shakes, protein bars, biscuits, discovered the ginger nut. Amazing. They ran out quite quickly, actually. We only discovered them halfway through. Had things like mug shots, tuna, sachets of tuna.
Okay.
Noodles.
Yeah.
Discovered the noodles. Amazing.
I read that you ran out of your noodles first.
Yeah. Well, thing is, and that's another thing that we saw, is some people are really good at saving their food. Whereas I'm like, nah, I'm all about... So I was like, nah, I haven't lived in the noodle moment. And I've used up all of my noodles. But then we found some, and that was a really great day. So yeah, just as much as you can eat, really. But and when you're feeling sick, chicken tikka masala doesn't really cut it.
No.
So it's quite hard to actually stomach the food.
Did you get seasick? Did everyone?
We
get
all. Nat wasn't. Well, I wasn't physically sick.
Yeah.
I was really nauseous for about 10 days.
Oof.
Laura was really sick. Ems was sick. Iz was sick. Lizanne was very sick.
Oh god.
Yeah, Nat was the only one. She's like the ocean warrior.
Wow.
That's
amazing.
She's just so at one. She calls the Pacific Oceana, and it's just. She's just great. in the way that she's like, yeah, she's at home in the ocean.
So I have to bring it down a notch, obviously, because there's the obvious question about toilets.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, regular question.
Has to be asked.
Yeah, definitely in showering. So toilet, bucket and chuck it.
Okay.
So there's a bucket between the two seats.
Yeah.
A lovely red bucket. And I mean, honestly, number two, sunset, 360 degree horizon. It's amazing. I loved it. Absolutely loved the bucket and chuck it. So yeah, I did that. And then for showering, it was our squirty water bottles.
Oh, okay.
Sitting on deck, yeah, having a bit of a shower, really. And it's really important to wash the salt.
Yeah.
Because otherwise your salt sores just get so much worse. And to be honest, you end up having a wash, especially when it's really splashy, every 2 hours. Not really? A full body wash, but at least sort of especially the areas like your bum that gets really affected because you're sitting.
Yeah.
You're basically sitting on a layer of salt. So it's just going into your skin.
And how do you deal with it? Is it just cream that you put
Pseudocreme, talcum powder.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just trying to make sure that they stay
Try and stable. Get on with it. Yeah. I mean, Nat gave me quite good advice. It was when our pressure sores were getting bad. It's just, when you get on the oars, you just have to get through the first 10 minutes. And then your body goes numb and you can't feel the pain anymore.
Right.
And it makes me feel quite emotional saying it. It's like, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Really horrible. But it is true.
Quite clever at the same time.
Yeah, once you get over that, it's like, yeah, I'm fine now. Until you move position or you get knocked off your seat by a wave.
Oh.
And then it starts again and you have to sit back down. It's just like, yeah, it's so painful.
And actually, from a practical perspective, given the... So we were just talking about food. I'm just trying to think. So given the amount of food, that's volume. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of space. Yeah. Where did that go?
And a lot of weight.
Yes.
So on deck we had hatches 3 on each side.
Okay.
Maybe 2. Maybe 4 on each side. So they would all fit in there, and we also had snack packs. And in a snack pack you'd have things like cereal bars, sweets.
Okay.
You'd have SOS Rehydrate, which is a rehydration sachet to go in your water. And so you'd have that as well throughout the day, and you'd just munch on that in between meals, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it all went on the deck, and I mean it got to the point on all of the legs, I think, where we were running out of food. Quite
really?
Dramatically running out of food. I mean, in the second leg, all they had left was beef curry. On the third leg, all we had left was apple and custard.
Whoa.
So it's quite funny, what you have left.
Okay.
So no, we needed to get to land.
Yeah.
And once the snack packs disappear, it's always quite sad.
Yeah, I can imagine. Oh, gosh. This is the small pleasures,
I guess. Like wine gums. No more wine gums.
Oh. So there was no restocking at all on any of the legs? Because what I forgot to mention at the beginning is this was unsupported.
Like, yes.
There wasn't a support kind of crew.
No.
At the same time. Because there was a late... But there was somebody... There is a documentary going to be...
Of us?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's called Losing Sight of Shore.
Yeah.
It's being made by Sarah Moshman in LA. She is awesome. She's won an Emmy already for doing a documentary called The Empowerment Project.
Okay.
So now she's working on art. Have you watched it?
I haven't watched it, but I follow it on social media. Really?
Yeah. And so she's making ours. It's going to be coming out in the autumn.
Amazing.
Which is really exciting, because I think we all just can't wait to see all of the legs, especially the three of us that did different legs.
Yeah,
just to see
true.
What the girls experienced on the other legs as well.
So how did it work?
We did all our own filming, so we had a Sony camera, quite a big camera,
right.
But obviously we couldn't bring out on deck that often, but things like video diaries, etc.
Yeah.
Then we had 2 GoPros, which were also waterproof, so we just did different angles.
Okay.
Nat was in charge of sort of camera.
Right.
And yeah, we had some quite cool different angles that we managed to get.
Brilliant.
For example, the sharks that followed us, we were able to get the cameras in the water, and we've got such good photos of them, which is really cool.
Yeah. So wildlife. What did you see?
I don't think the third leg, I think the girls will say this, that it wasn't as much wildlife as the other legs.
Okay.
They saw sort of like whales really close up, and they got sort of the water from the blowhole.
Oh, really?
That they could actually feel and things like that.
Okay.
On the last leg we had sea turtles, which are really cute.
Wow.
We did have a shark that followed us for a good week called Eduardo. Right. We had a thing, because we were the only women, we thought if we name all of the wildlife male Spanish names, especially shark Spanish names, and that was my biggest fear getting onto the boat, seeing sharks.
Oh gosh.
And so when we saw one, which, funnily enough, we saw one the day after me and Laura had been in swimming.
Oh, no.
Which just made it... Oh, I was so scared. And, yes, we called him Eduardo. He swam with us for about a week, on and off. And then we had another one we called Tonto, which just circled the boat very fast for a 2-hour shift.
Wow.
And we just whacked him so many times with our oars. By accident.
Yeah.
We had to row really hard that night, and me and Nat, although it was very funny, it actually, like, I'm really sorry, we keep hitting you, just go away. So yeah, we saw some whales.
Nice.
Quite in the distance. They're just huge.
Yeah.
You don't believe the size and scale of them, and then when you compare it to the size of your boat, it's amazing, but it's also a little bit scary.
Mm.
Yeah, it was amazing, but mainly the birds. Boobies.
Oh, really?
Absolutely hilarious. They'd come on deck. Well, they'd sleep on top of our solar cabins. Solar panels, sorry. And just stay the night. And we'd be like,
oh,
thanks,
lovely.
Guys. Thanks for the night. Yeah.
And I can only imagine the stars.
Amazing. I don't think the stars themselves are any brighter than stars I've seen in other places in the world, but the scale and the size of the sky, that's what really, because you literally look from one side all the way over to the other, and they almost stretch down, touching the sea.
Wow.
Because it's such a big sky.
That's just magic.
Yeah, so, and we saw some pretty cool, well, shooting stars.
Yeah.
Because the amount of time, normally you don't, when you're stargazing, you do about, you know, a strong 10 minutes and you're a bit cold now.
Yeah.
And so then you go inside, whereas actually, because you're rowing, the only thing you get is a sore neck from looking up.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, really cool shooting stars. Made a lot of wishes.
That's just amazing. Yeah, good. That's good wish time. You've got like your wishes stocked up for life.
Yeah.
As varied as possible. How many can I get in? I guess, like, what were the biggest challenges, and were there any scary moments?
Yes. One of the things that I learnt, and it sounds silly, but I hadn't really thought about waves.
Okay.
Which sounds ridiculous. You're about to row an ocean, you know, there's going to be waves.
Yeah.
And so we went out to meet the girls in this amazing old Samoan boat. Went out and I was like, Tony, who's our logistics, 24-hour logistics guy, Tony, these waves are big. And he was like, Meg, are you joking? They're tiny. And I was like, oh my God, they're really big. And then I see Doris, the first rowing boat I've ever seen, head towards us. And I'm like, Bloomin' X, she's low on the water. So then we get onto Doris,
yeah.
And it's fine in the daytime. It's like, oh, okay, just getting used to how she moves.
Mm.
And I realised that in life, our life is built on comparisons.
Yeah.
And that's how you have any knowledge, because you've experienced something else before.
True.
So I'd experienced two like daylight days of waves. So then the night comes and there's no moon. It's the time of the month when there's no moon.
Gosh.
So now there's this feeling, this new feeling, and I can't see them.
Wow.
And so those first few days, and they were big waves those first few days, we were being pushed off our seats.
God.
And honestly, I don't know how many times I begged Laura to put out the power anchor. To say it's too rough to row. She's like, just keep going, it's fine, it's fine. But it's okay if you can see what's heading towards you.
Yeah, fair enough.
But when you can't see what's heading towards you, it's a bit like, I don't know, when you're in a car, I guess, and, well, it's not really a car. I don't know, but when you can prepare your body
exactly.
for being hit by something.
Yeah.
So if you know you're going to fall over,
yeah.
you kind of land a bit better.
Yeah.
If you don't, then you land on your nose.
In a position, or if the wind's blowing, or
yeah.
you can't see the wind, that's a really silly example. But you can
do it. Like, so you get kind of, you fall off, and it just makes it so much, it was really scary, really scary. But then you start building comparisons, you're like, oh, this isn't as big as last week, this is fine, we can do this, we did it before. And that's actually where I felt the hardest with the team, is that these girls, they'd already been rowing for like 190 days.
Yeah.
They knew about the sea conditions. They knew what Doris could do.
Mm.
But I didn't, so I really had to put my trust in them, that they knew what they were doing
yeah.
and we were going to be fine. And I'm happy that I managed to do that on the first or second day, really, because otherwise, well, trust is one of our values and it's a really important value.
Yeah. And so there are the team values, aren't they? You've just reminded
yeah,
me.
Yeah, spirit.
Yeah. And was that something that was come up? Who came up with the values?
Everyone came up with the values, I think. It was long before I got involved.
Okay.
I don't actually know exactly where they came from, but all I know is that they're brilliant. And we've got business coaches that we use, Best Year Yet, who are one of our sponsors.
Okay.
And they really help us with putting the plan together and sticking to our values. And
because there, I think if so, was it strength,
perseverance, inspiration, resilience,
trust.
Integrity, and trust?
Yeah, well done.
It's the two eyes, I never know which way to put them around. And really, each of those words, and we had it in the boat, above our heads in the cabin, and you'd look at it and you'd be like, am I being strong today? Am I being resilient today?
Okay.
Am I really being myself? Is, you know, is there integrity there? Do I trust in my team? And honestly, to each one of those, that's where we all come together, because we all believe in them exactly the same way. And that's what's pulled us together and held us together.
That's a really interesting lesson for things in general, because a lot of companies have, you know, have words that people are supposed to associate themselves with, but I don't think it's ever properly reinforced.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be, you know, in the kitchen on the wall or something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really mean anything to anybody. And clearly you guys actually lived and breathed your values.
Yeah. And we were shown a picture. So if you can imagine a big arrow.
Yeah.
And inside this arrow, there's other arrows.
Yeah.
And what we want and what we do is all of our arrows are facing the same way, and it's in the forward direction.
Okay.
And, you know, on the boat, that was so important because our main focus was to get to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on land now, actually, our main focus is to raise funds for our charities.
Yeah.
And, you know, empower women and continue really the messages that we want to spread.
Yeah.
And I think in companies, perhaps all of those arrows aren't necessarily all facing in the right direction.
Mm.
So if you've got arrows all facing in different directions, then it's probably not as focused. And that's what our values are.
Okay. I really like that. I think it's nice. Because obviously, the talk you did the other night, that's what you based the talk on. I thought that was really nice. But you wonder to what extent, one, how they came about, and then two, whether they actually meant anything genuinely. And I think that's really nice. I suppose just coming back to sort of practicalities, did anyone get injured?
Because none of us missed a shift in the whole 257 days.
Wow.
Which shocks me, especially considering I never rowed before.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, Em's is such a good rower, she's the best rowing teacher. But
one that had been an international national rower.
So she's rowed for England, but she won the Cambridge boat race.
Okay,
10 years ago we worked out. We were talking to the Cambridge girls last night because they've got the boat race next week.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, come on, you can do it.
Yeah.
kind of thing. But none of us really got. I mean, there were niggles.
Yeah.
Definite niggles. But not actually any. No injuries that stopped us rowing.
That is phenomenal.
I mean, Laura's a physio, so that was brilliant on the boat. Because if we did get any niggle, I had a bit of a shoulder niggle. You know, just a bit of slouching, kind of things like that, where she could sort it out. Different things, really, but managed to manage them.
That is phenomenal. Mm. And what were the main, sort of, the real highlights of the whole thing for you?
Honestly, laughter.
Really?
And it sounds ridiculous, but I don't know whether it was more of a laugh or cry.
Yeah.
Definitely sometimes it was. Or where you're so tired and delirious that the only thing you can do is laugh.
Yeah.
But, so I don't think there's one particular, there's highlights like the sunrises, sunsets, amazing, like massive waves that you get over, really good days that you have because you're just in a great mood and you suddenly realise, oh my God, look where I am.
Yeah.
Which, especially when I got on the boat, I kept having these, I'd have to say, sorry, can we just stop talking? I'm having a moment of euphoria. And we'd have to have a minute of sort of silence once I got over my moment of euphoria. We had speakers on deck. And so we had
cool.
a sunset session. Towards the end, definitely, we did it a lot more. But at sunset, we'd have sort of like more chiba on. And it would be this amazing sort of like bit more chiba. Two of the girls would be sleeping. It would be their first sleep shift. And then two of us would be rowing.
Yeah.
And I kept just being like, oh my God, look at the sunset. I'm listening to Mortiba out of these speakers on the deck of a 29-foot rowing boat, unsupported in the middle of the Pacific. And I didn't even know how to row 3 weeks ago.
That's it. Well, you were saying to me earlier that a year ago you didn't even know you were going to be going.
No. Yes,
that's
I think on the 28th
nuts.
Of March, Laura said, can you step in? And I always told her I like last minute.
Yeah.
So I didn't want a whole year of planning, so it was perfect for me.
So are there any sort of tracks... Music. I think that's so cool that you had music on the way. That is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And are there now things that you just play just to kind of...
Do you know what's so fun? Because we got into... So when we came into Cairns,
we
had this song which Laura had been wanting to play. So I think we played it when we saw land as well.
Okay.
But Laura said, you know, in the years of preparation that this took, she had this one song that she wanted to play when we got to land. And the other day I asked them what it was, because I was like, what was that song?
Yeah.
And I played it, and it's from Gladiator. I'd have to find it what it is. It's the Gladiator theme tune, I Am Free, I think it is.
Okay.
I think. I'd have to find it.
Okay.
But also there's songs like Bruno Mars was quite a big person on the third leg. I think each leg has a different
Yeah, that makes sense. Sort of soundtrack.
Waves by Dr. Probst, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, there's different ones which we'd all go, amazing. That really reminds me of the Pacific. I mean, there's loads of stuff, though.
I can imagine. If you've got four people's playlists, that's a lot of music to be going through.
One of the days that I really cried was when my iPod broke. iPod broke. And it's a big, you know, you think, for God's sake, there's bigger things that happen at sea. But this happened at sea, and our iPods breaking was a really big deal.
But I think there's one of the blog posts that is about that, because when you're really tired like that, and you're physically drained, and you're crying, I don't know, when I'm really tired, crying happens a lot more easily than it does in general.
And it makes you feel so much better.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things, actually, some of us learn, is that being vulnerable is okay. We don't have to be these really strong... You know, we are strong.
Yeah.
But it's okay to cry, and it doesn't really affect your strength.
No.
It actually makes you feel so great.
Yeah.
And letting out a few tears is really good. But music is one of the only ways you can escape.
Okay.
You know, looking out at sea and everything is great, but you really have to be in the right mindset to escape and do that.
Yeah.
But music, you know, it's such close proximity. Everything on the boat can be heard. Everything can be seen. There is no escaping. So by you closing your eyes, putting in your music, and just rowing. And that's where being in the back seat of the boat was kind of the space. I think for all of us, we'd say that was like your private space where you could put in your music. Because if you're in the front seat, the girls in the cabin are looking out.
Oh, right, okay.
And to you, so that's sort of
there.
And then on the back, you're sort of in your own little world. Yeah. So plug in your tunes and just have a silent session.
So no, such a stupid question. No TV or films?
Yeah, presumably. We had The Sound of Music.
Wow.
Brilliant. But we did have a few films.
Okay.
Which were on the iPad, on the laptop.
Right.
Yeah, so on Christmas Day we managed to watch Madagascar 2, which is
super
brilliant.
Good choice.
But obviously we couldn't all watch it together. One night when we put the power anchor out, and this, I had a real like, oh my God, where am I? It was so rough. So we had to put the power anchor out, back and down the hatches.
Yeah.
And me and Laura were in the aft cabin.
Yeah.
Had a Twix. We had the screen on the iPad by the door, and there were waves crashing onto the door, and we were watching Hitch. And I was just like, where are we? I'm so cosy in here. Yeah, at the end of this film, I've got to go out and row, and I really don't want to because it's really rough. Oh no, we can't row. Oh, it's too rough. Let's have a nap. And it was just brilliant. It's funny.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm. And but we told each other stories.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
But stories are films, and it is unbelievable. At telling, she can tell the whole of Lord of the Rings with all of the character names. So, and you can really make it last for 2 hours because it's a full film. But Iz remembers quotes.
That's incredible.
I mean, we've all got, so Laura's is Hitch, amazing.
Okay.
Em's is really good at Notting Hill.
Okay.
I'm average at Mrs. Doubtfire. So we all had different things that we sort of did. I don't know Lizanne's. Nat didn't tell me a story, but her life story is so unbelievably amazing that.
Oh, really?
She's such a traveller that it's...
Okay.
That's kind of like a film in itself.
Oh, that's so cool. It's so nice to get to... It's very rare that you'd ever get to know people in that kind of depth. And you all got on. So it's not like you've all walked off the boat and you're never going to speak to each other again.
Yeah.
Which could genuinely...
Definitely not. I just love these girls.
Yeah.
I'm so in awe of them.
Cool. And were there any other highlights, I guess, that are worth...
I mean, getting to land, seeing our families.
So what was that? Because, that must have been so intense.
It was bonkers because we got, the best thing happened. So we came towards the shore and parked our boat. Well, first of all, we saw land and there were loads of little boats all around us that were like, oh, we've come to see, you know, well done.
Wow.
So we're having different chats everywhere with people.
Yeah.
And then we came towards the shore, saw our families. So it was like, oh my God. Put the boat, moored the boat. And then the first thing, of course, we get to Cairns. What do they give us? A Stubbs. Is it called a Stubbs each? A beer? And you see the photos, the girls aren't that bothered, whereas beer is like my favourite thing. And so I grab the beer and they're like, no, you need to put it down, they want photos. And it was just like, oh please, no, please. So did that. But then we came onto land and we went straight into a press conference. And it was sort of like Sky News were fighting with the Discovery Channel over who could, you know. So guys, there's enough space for everybody. But it was so surreal. And then we had a bowl of fruit and that was amazing.
Wow.
And Yeah, it's just really cool. I don't really remember that much of that day, but...
I can imagine. But you've got, I mean, amazingly and so obviously deserved, you've got a really good amount of media.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Obviously, yeah, we were really
charity
lucky.
Charity stuff
really,
and everything.
Really lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we raised a lot in that week when we got back, so...
That's amazing. Because I was saying earlier, before we started, I was like, Epic has used a lot, but frankly, this is genuinely epic. And like, yeah, just phenomenal. So, yeah, what's it like, I guess, being back... yeah, and sort of readapting to normal life, I guess.
I realised something on the boat. Number one, I hate my phone because it's just, it's so nice to be able to switch off and not have technology.
Yeah.
Technology is amazing, but this world is being taken over by it. But it's not only that, because it is great if you don't use it all of the time, but we don't listen to each other and we don't have time.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's so many of my friends now that I see them and it's like, oh no, you know, we will catch up. I've been back for 8 weeks. And there's just not time because people have so much to do and we have fit so much into our lives. And I just want to sit down and just walk with people and not have any technology and just listen.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying, how are you? And not really listening to the end of their sentence, which I think we do a lot. And I'm really trying to, you know, just keep an eye on it. And you sit on the tube and everyone's on their phone and it's just a bit sad.
I know. It is. I remember doing another podcast episode and it was two guys that had cycled around the world and they were like, they got back and they went back to work and they were like, I'm going on the train to go somewhere and then I'm coming back, and it just kind of that kind of weird routine of doing the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Even though when you do challenges there's still routine whatever you're doing, and yours mm-hmm. there was a huge amount of routine, but nevertheless like you're always in a different place.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was
I'm just thinking
really weird.
About on the boat, all we had to think about was survival, yeah. Which is quite a big thing, but there were things that led to survival. So, okay, have I hydrated myself enough? Have I eaten enough?
Yeah.
Okay, 2 hours, then I'll be rowing again.
Yeah.
There's not anything else. And in life, we have so much going on that we're constantly, okay, what time do I have to get that train? When do I... Time, that's actually one thing. On the boat, it didn't really matter if it was 1 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
True.
It was just, where was it in that 2 hour slot?
Yeah.
Am I off or am I on? That's it. Which is just, yeah, and I don't know, it's just weird. I don't really... We've all got different opinions about being back, but I wouldn't mind being back on the boat a lot of the time.
Oh, really?
I loved it. But it's great talking to people and, you know, beginning to do talks and, you know, telling people about our adventure, and it's really awesome. But I'm ready to do another one soon.
That's so cool. I think that's you've got the bug. Seriously, got the bug. But you had done stuff before. I mean, had you always been super kind of, even growing up, had you always wanted to do little projects?
Yeah, I mean, it probably started when I was 17 and I shaved off all of my hair for charity.
Nice.
In front of my school. Don't know if it was the best decision at the time, using shaving foam and a razor on your head. But I just raising money for charity, and I just get really inspired by just, I think we should all be grateful for where we are and what we've got, and I think we should all try and give back if we can.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So yeah, no, I've done some marathons and done a bit of climbing and stuff, but nothing to this extent.
No, true, but you've done Kilimanjaro and Machu Picchu. They're not tiny things.
No. Yeah.
They're decent sized challenges. I get it's definitely not 7 days at sea, but yeah, the sea thing really gets me because it's something that I would be genuinely terrified of on a level that I'm not sure that... I don't like to admit it, but yeah, I just don't know whether I'd want to overcome it.
It's interesting because I think as humans, we have so much control.
Yes.
In life, we can control our lives pretty much. You know, we don't have to worry about... Well, in this country, there's not going to be a tsunami hit. You know, we don't have to worry about natural disasters, things like that.
Yeah.
But on the sea, number one, it's quite easy to forget how strong nature is.
Yeah.
But then you actually realise, and you're being carried by this just strong current, or there's huge waves, and you think, oh my God, this is really like, this is as tough as it gets.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting drenched by every wave. We're being knocked off of our seats so close to actually going overboard. And, you know, we're doing all we can to survive.
Yeah.
And you can't really think about it too much, really, because, I mean, we went in swimming. Look, it was one thing that I said that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then Laura was like, well, let's do it then. And we had to scrape the barnacles off as well. So I was on shark watch. while she was scraping barnacles. Honestly, I thought I'd love it. But you look down into this blue abyss of just, you know, it's between 3 to 12 miles deep, the Pacific.
Yeah.
But no one really knows
what's there.
What's there? And it, you just can't think about it too much because you're on your own. You're like 1,000 miles from anywhere else. There might be an atoll over there with some boulders that are poking out and, you know, really strong currents or reefs. And that's it. And, well, you just can't... Now it's fine on land, but...
Yeah.
It makes me feel a little bit funny thinking about that.
I just think it's just one of those things. I mean, this project, it's just... It is... It's definitely one of those things, if you set your mind to it, you can do it. And, you know, Laura, who I think came up with the project...
Yeah.
Came up with it sort of 4 years before it finished, and there were various different... She thought it was going to start in 2013, then 2014.
I think some of the girls would say actually getting to the start line was the hardest.
Yeah.
Because then you're on the boat. Yeah. It's the whole you don't have a choice thing, you know, you're doing the 2 hours on, 2 hours off. Don't get me wrong, it's hard, terrible at some times, but actually getting the sponsorship, you know, getting the boat built... Getting onto the water, getting it shipped to San Francisco. There's so much sharing the story, trying to tell people about the project, trying to make people believe in the project, that it was actually going to happen and that we were going to make it and we were going to be at the finish line, was almost, what they'd say, harder than doing the row itself.
Because when you look at the website, the whole list of sponsors, it's a huge list of sponsors, and the work that must have gone in to get all of those people involved is just phenomenal. I mean, I'm an absolute awe of the idea of one coming up with such a huge project. That's one thing. And then, you know, clearly there were genuine setbacks along the way that could have made the average person just think, you know what, I've tried this, it's not going anywhere, I'm just not going to bother now. But I guess Laura is a very determined, focused person, and just phenomenal. I suppose just to sort of round up, what are the, I mean, we've been through some of the lessons, but what are the lessons that you think, like, will transfer into life, I guess, that are most valuable for you and the other people, I suppose, would?
I suppose live by your values.
Yeah.
Definitely. Set your mind to something you can't, believe in yourself, you can do it.
Yeah.
Which I'm definitely guilty of not doing that at some points, for sure. You can do it, just keep going. I think the big, I mean, crossing a Pacific on land.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you can face your own personal challenge. And kind of, Night of Adventure actually said this a lot as well. It's not about running 100 marathons in 100 days. It's doing what your personal challenge is. Go to your first yoga class. Yeah. Walk outside your front door and walk around a park. Get on a sleeper train to Scotland. You know, it doesn't just... We've only got one life to live.
Yeah.
And I think we should live it and just try new things. And it doesn't matter if it's... It doesn't really matter. It doesn't even have to be physical.
No.
It could be learn French.
Yeah, exactly. But I think you had a really nice in one of your blog posts. It was like, it's kind of stroke by stroke.
Yeah.
And like step by step, essentially. Yeah. And whatever you're going through, you know, you guys probably find yourself in some quite treacherous situations. Just by doing those strokes, you're gradually moving forward. It's about moving forward, really.
Yeah, definitely. And just, believe in yourself. I mean, Nat would probably say as well, and she's taught all of us, I'd say, to do this, is just live in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm definitely, that's one thing I've learned, is I'm very quick to be like, oh, next week I'm doing this, it's going to be awesome. Or next month, whereas actually, what am I doing today? What am I doing right now?
Yeah.
This is amazing, we're making a podcast.
Exactly, yeah. but you guys are off doing loads of talks, aren't you?
Yeah. So we're taking bookings for, different companies, schools. There's lots of different angles and lots of different talks that we want to get involved in and, you know, raising money for our charities, really.
Okay. Awesome. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. And if people want to find you on social media?
Social media, we've got a website, which is www.coxlesscrew.com. But you can also text donate to our charities, Breast Cancer Care and Walking with the Wounded, which is 7300. The word Doris takes £3.
Goes to the charities. Mm-hmm. That's really good. So obviously you're still fundraising.
Yeah, doing as much as we can. Raised, I think it's a bit over 50,000 now, which is great because that was a big.
Yeah.
I think we were saying 50,000 when we were on 48, you know, and now we're saying it and we're on 52, so we should probably say we're on 52.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's going up. We just need to share the story really and tell people about.
Yeah, exactly. So anyone listening who's inspired, don't hesitate to share. And yeah, thanks so much for your time. I know it's quite busy at the moment.
No, thank you.
Really enjoyed it. And just, yeah, huge congratulations. I can't wait to see, given you're still in the space of I want more adventure. I'm sort of, what's going to come next? And just feeling really excited about things for you. So yeah, good luck going forward. And thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed Meg's insights into what it's like to row across an ocean. What an incredible achievement. As usual, all of the relevant links will be on the livebeyond.co website. Thanks again for listening. Really hope you enjoyed it. And I'll be posting another episode soon. Thanks again. Bye.